So let's move seamlessly now.
Sorry to interrupt your ceremony. It's nothing personal. I just want to devour your god.
This is like some gravity's reboot.
M-O-L-M-M.
What? Feels apocryphal, but I'll take it.
No, that's true. Don't look it up. Don't look it up.
I mean, that is made for undiscerning taste.
I'll just auto-tune that, put a little guitar solo at the end. Perfect. Please. All right. 6 hours later.
Y'all done got diddly painted.
You done got diddly painted.
Exactly.
Nope.
No.
Welcome to Men of Low Moral Fiber, the show that puts in the work and never takes shortcuts like, you know, like turning on God mode hidden in the accessibility menu. I'm your host, Ben Helms, and with me as always is my counterweight and co-host, the Stimpy to my Ren, the Dale to my Chip, the I fucking hate this game to my, oh, I really quite enjoyed it a lot, Miss Corrigan Vaughn.
I'm always waiting to figure out which one of us you're introducing with these. And then it's like it gets to a point. Sometimes I don't know until you say our names. But that time it was pretty clear.
Nice. Yeah. And of course, no month episode will be complete without my big brother and co-host, the Annie to my Hallie, the Tia to my Tamara, the Joel to my Benji, Mr. Jason Helms. How's it going, man?
I didn't get half those. In fact, the only one I got was Tia and Tamara.
That was Parent Trap, that first one that threw.
Yeah, I'm glad Tia and Tamara is the one you got. And then Joel and Benji.
Absolutely.
Oh, the Maddens, obviously.
Maddens, the Madden twins. Twins? Are they
of
twins?
Good Charlotte.
Ah, I was like, John Madden has a brother and John's name is Joel. What's happening?
Yeah. Who do you think is carrying on the video game after John's passing?
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And Corey, you are calling in from Europe. Right now.
From Europe. They don't call it Europe here, which always makes me laugh because like
Europe,
you know,
is the continent.
Europe's the continent. But they'll like Spain is Europe. So they'll be like, oh, I went on holiday to Europe. And I'm like, you're in it right now.
This is it.
This is not it. No wonder Brexit happened. They don't even know what continent they're on already.
Yeah, fair.
Just like
fair.
How in America, we don't call it that shithole like everyone else does.
Yes, seriously.
Oh my God.
I do, actually. That's the formal name.
It's true.
I'm away, though, right? When we're here, it's this shithole.
It's home.
Oh, where are you from? That shithole over there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Helpful. Wonderful. You enjoying your holiday?
You know it.
I do find it novel, though, the time thing. And I realize, Corey, you do it every single week with Mark, the whole time thing. But I'm like, it's 9 a.m. here. And it's like, I don't know, the afternoon, wherever you are.
It's, 5 p.m.
Oh,
over
my
here.
Gosh.
It's a little closer between me and Mark. But yeah, it's a lot.
The energy is going to be so different. Usually it's me at like my peak, like getting ready to kind of wind down.
Yeah.
And Corey is like
9 p.m. Jason, usually
all ready for bed.
I'm about to pass out. Yeah.
All in her snooty.
Yeah, that's
snooty.
What it is. Yep.
Ready to, which, by the way,
I think
by the way, counters everything you've said so far today.
Oh, you do love big sweaters.
You're a liar. You're a liar.
It doesn't touch my arms. That's why I like it. It doesn't touch my arms. It's too big to touch my arms. And so I'm just inside.
We were having a conversation about how Corrigan does not like wearing sweaters.
I don't like things to touch my arms. I'm not a fan of it.
Except for the 5 hours it took for the tattoo artist to tattoo your arm.
A touching person your arm the can whole time. Touch my arm.
Oh, okay.
I don't
okay,
want fabric to touch my arm.
Fair.
I have a lot of weird sensory issues, and amongst them is the feel of fabric on my arms. But my hoodie and this like giant Stitch sweatshirt I was just wearing, like they're too big, so they don't touch my arms while I'm wearing them, but they keep me warm.
Oh, it's not like encircling your arm. It's just like over your arm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If I'm very cold, obviously I will suck it up and put something on. I just would prefer.
Right. Preference.
Not to have fabric touching me.
Fair.
You know what I hate is when
Jason's going to figure out how you're
fabric.
Wrong.
No. When fabric bunches on the inside of the elbow. Right.
Oh,
here.
It's the worst.
I always pull my stuff up, though, so it's kind of always like that.
Yeah.
I've only had a few shirts like a wetsuit.
Oh, right.
If you're on a wetsuit, sometimes it'll bunch right there. It almost hurts. It's like, ow.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I thought you meant like an undershirt under a dress shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that'll
that's
do it.
What, that's the thing where I'm like trying to like get in there and straighten it out.
Yeah, any kind of lumpiness in a shirt is like nightmarish. Like,
no. That's not a fan.
Just clothes shouldn't do that.
This is why people downloaded the podcast. to get hot takes like this.
This is right.
There is someone out there right now, some other neurodivergent doofus with sensory issues who feels very seen right now
by my
inability to finally wear lumpy clothes.
Lump talk.
Yeah. Clothes are oppressive and I want nothing to do with them.
Fair. Corey is forecasting the coming of the great smoothening, doing away with the lumps.
Yes. Mm-hmm, here, here. Mm-hmm.
And we are here today not only to talk about the hashtag Lump Talk, we're here to talk about the game Tunic,
the sequel to Nick,
which was, it's like a fuzzy Zelda, just running around with your sword and your shield and cutting down bushes and trees and Oompa Loompas or whatever they are, Goombas, that's Mario, but whatever, I don't know the names of all the things you cut down in this, but a lot of little alien things. Aliens? Monsters?
No, because it's not written in English, so how would you know?
Well,
but Jason found like a transliteration. It's a more pretentious.
It's just its own alphabet. It's written in English.
Oh, interesting. Oh, okay.
Let's introduce this and we'll get to how that works, shall we?
Yeah. Let's get into it. All right, Jason, you want to give us a little history, a little development, how where this game came from?
Absolutely. It was a pretty small team. The core of it is creator Andrew Schuldeis, who got this idea in 2015. Should he keep his job or just go make a video game?
Nice.
This is so much like the last game that we played. Yeah. The guy who just picked up and moved to Austin to make games.
Exactly.
To not be in traffic.
Yeah.
So he does it and he works on it over and over. And kind of the core of it is this very Zelda-inspired interest in mysteries and discovering little strange things about the game. And it builds and builds. And pretty quickly, they get the little fox with his little sword, his little shield, so, and he's cute, so cute, and they love it's him. Very cute. And Schuldeis said, I'm just not really good at making people. And so that's why I made the little fox.
I can't draw hands. So
yeah.
Can't draw hands. Boom. So he starts pulling in other people. He started pulling in some people to do audio. And he had a little kind of 10 to 12 hour demo of it that could get people a good vibe of the game. He says that none of that remains since.
Oh.
And slowly pulling together a much, much bigger team. And it was fun listening, reading to them talk about the different issues that come up. For instance, doing everything isometrically meant that if they were doing cool 3D audio, the audio cue might be happening like two levels below what's happening on the stage. And so it would be play the wrong audio cue because the player just couldn't see it because of the isometrics. And so it involved them like learning a lot of new things to kind of like develop how to do that. And yeah. Man, the audio is really good in this game. It's really fun. It pays off well. And so that is Power Up Audio is the group that did that. So yeah, the team grew gradually. He started pulling in level designers, including level designers that already had been influenced by the look of Tunic because of some early...
What?
Yeah, early sneak previews of it had been so influential.
That's awesome.
They were doing their own games based on kind of a Tunic vibe and then got called up to the big leagues of an indie game called Tunic.
That's really cool.
It's like that thing where, like, did you guys ever watch that documentary about that guy's, you know, actors who are like that guy's, you may not know their name, but you see them in everything.
I know what you mean, but I haven't seen the documentary. Yeah.
I think it's called like, I Know That Face or something like that. But there's one of the interviews in it is with Stephen Tobolowsky, who's a great that guy.
Ned
Ryerson?
Yes, Ned. Ned Ryerson. And he got called in for an audition, or his agent got him an audition that was looking for a Stephen Tobolowsky
type. Amazing.
He did not get the part.
Fantastic.
But
Jeffrey Tambor got the part.
Jeffrey Tambor got it. Yeah, exactly. Yep. But just this idea of like, oh, you were the imitation thing, but now you're the real thing here. Anyways, go on.
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's pretty much it. The game came out March of last year, right? Is that 2022?
That sounds right.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That seems right.
I've been thinking about it ever since then.
And it was a hit. A lot of people were fans. I think there's a lot of reasons for its success. The art style we've mentioned, the ability to kind of explore and get deeper in. I'm excited to get into gameplay. But I think, honestly, one big part of its success was having immortality as an accessibility menu option.
That's so huge.
People could turn on at different points and decide whether or not they you know, to what degree they wanted to engage in it and where they wanted to add that in.
I wonder if you said at what time they want to engage in that or whatever, what how far they want to go into that. I wonder if they had difficulty settings, if that would have been even going a step further.
See, that's what I wish that this had, because I eventually just put on the God mode for the whole thing, or no fail mode, as it's called.
Same.
Where I might have just tried different difficulties if that had been available to me.
I think most people turn it on at some point.
I don't know how you wouldn't.
By the time we got to the end, Jason was talking. We were on the phone as I was beating the game right after the day after Jason beat it. And it was just like, this was difficult and took a long time to beat the final two bosses with God mode engaged.
With the no fail mode on. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to do that. And at one point, Jay, you said to me, this is harder than the last couple bosses of Elden Ring.
Than Millennia, than the optional extra hard boss.
The like famously insanely hard boss.
And then at first you started playing it, and we're both playing with God mode, and I was like, without God mode, this would be more difficult than that. And you started playing, and you got partway through, and you're like, no, I don't think it's quite that tough. It's really tough. Granted,
that took us weeks. I don't know. Yeah.
And then the boss goes to their second phase, and he's like, yep, it's tougher. You're right.
I think one of the things
is insane,
and we'll obviously talk more about this because I do want to throw in something, one more thing about the development or whatever. But the thing about God mode is that sometimes things would be easier simply because since I wasn't worried about getting killed, I would go for it a little more.
Totally.
So, you know, where it was like I was trying so hard not to get hit by something that I would constantly get hit, where like sometimes when I was, you know, on the no fail mode, I was like, oh, I'll just go for it. And then it'd be like, I didn't get hit that entire battle because I just actually did what, you know, I was supposed to do.
100%.
The one thing I wanted to throw in is actually Mark told me this yesterday when we were recording JOAG that Tunic won a couple BAFTAs, a couple of gaming BAFTAs. So for like for the art for the game and best first game or something like that for like the studio for the developers it. So yeah, it's also a BAFTA winning game.
Yeah, I can pull up all the awards if we'd like to look at it real quick. Nominated for a bunch, best indie game at the Golden Joysticks, best debut indie game, action adventure game, and independent game at the Game Awards. One outstanding achievement for an indie game at DICE. One artistic achievement and debut game at the British
debut Academy game. That was what I was looking for.
Game Awards, which I'm assuming is BAFTA adjacent.
Yes.
Yep, it
that
is.
That was the one.
The BAFTA wing of the.
That was what I was talking about. Yes, which is kind of cool that like BAFTA has a gaming wing.
Yeah,
that'd be cool if the Academy.
I don't think our Academy has that. Yeah,
that'd be pretty awesome.
Taking it very seriously as a forum, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I will say, just as a general note, I really liked how they didn't shy away from this just being a complete copy of Zelda in a thousand ways.
Yeah, wears its influence on its sleeve.
From the aesthetics to what the main character is wearing to what how the fighting, like to the menu screen, your inventory screen is like the original Legend of Zelda and every Zelda since, I guess. It hasn't changed that much, but it's very much like a modernized version of Legend of Zelda in all the, even in like the same ways I would get frustrated with the original Zelda games, where I'm like, I've been through this dungeon, I've beaten this guy, and I'm stuck here for 12 hours and I can't beat it until my big brother comes in and he beats it. And he, the only way he beat it is because he talked to Michael Conrad about it.
That's right.
And they just like slam their heads against the wall until one of them accidentally found this invisible bridge across the water, whatever, where it's like, there's no way I could have beaten this game by myself.
Accidentally finding shit is a huge part of this game.
Yes, huge part of this game. Oh yeah. My, if this game came out in 1994, I think it'd be my all-time favorite game because it would have taken me 4 years to beat.
Yeah.
And I would have beat it with like all my friends along the way, and it'd always be there on my SNES or whatever. Yeah.
I want to talk about accidentally finding stuff and also times when you're like, there is a secret over here. I can feel it in my being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so gameplay officially. Here we go.
Just to, I feel like, to throw it out there, our experiences of this game were, like, very Goldilocks-y.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was, like, you know, Jason loved it straight out the gate. Ben, you kind of warmed to it and were like, yes, yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fuck this.
Yep.
So I played a lot of it.
And you never really changed.
Yeah. I, you know,
yep.
did everything that I could because I was looking forward to this game for so long.
Yeah.
And because aesthetically and whatnot, it really does have this like, it looks like it should hit me like Death's Door. Like, just like you said to me on Twitter, Ben, I was like, this, it looks like Death's Door. I should really be enjoying this.
Yeah.
And I am not never at any moment of that game ever once enjoying it, but I felt like I should. So I just kept pressing. So I ended up playing, I think, total like 12 hours, which is a lot more than I usually give to these games where nice I nope out 20 minutes in. Where I'm like, sorry, guys, now you're on your own on this one.
Yeah. And yeah, not a lot of like breadcrumbs bringing you back to like dopamine hits at all. You're just like a slog for 12 hours.
Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly. Tough.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's tough.
Do you want to talk about that at all? About what it was that you didn't like?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think my expectations were wrong for this game, for one. Right. So I was expecting Death's Door. It absolutely is not that. It is more of, it aesthetically looks like that. It is more Zelda. It's more open world than I was expecting it
very
to be,
open world.
Which is not, you guys know, that's not really a thing that I do in games. I don't like to wander.
Yeah.
In a game, I really like linearity in a game. Take me from A to B to C, you know, let me fight some shit along the way. Eventually I get to, you know, I'm learning this story as I go and it ends. Right. So that's usually what I look for in something. And so that kind of on its face wasn't really a thing that I like in something. And then I was shocked at how hard it is.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was really not what I was expecting from this game. So like when we picked this one on the last episode, my reasoning, if you recall, was like, I want to fight some shit. Like, I want to go play a game where I have my sword and I fight some guys. And fighting in this game is miserable. It's so punishing.
It is punishing.
You're extremely slow. Before you figure out how to level up your stats, and even kind of once you do, because they don't go that high, you die very easily. Where you respawn is not as bad as, say, Hollow Knight, but they're not great either.
No.
So a lot of running from a place that's like 2 to 3 minutes away and then dying 8 seconds into the battle and going back, doing that over and over and over again. I hate that. I really couldn't get used to, and I get that this is a thing that is in these kinds of games, but this is why I don't play them. The fact that when you go to change a weapon, it doesn't pause.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my God.
I could not. On top of that, the buttons that you use were not intuitive to me at all. I would open up that thing to change a weapon and I would accidentally turn I would turn my sword into something that is not a weapon.
Oh yeah. Yes.
And then like exit out of that thing. And then I would like go and I would eat something instead of having a weapon to fight with or things like that. All the while the things are attacking me. I died with that menu open so many times. So it was just kind of like all the kinds of things you could put into a game that like deeply frustrate me with none of like, there was nothing to get that endorphin hit. So even when I did like sometimes discover something or accomplish something, I think the frustration that got me there made it so that I was like, I guess now I move on to the next fucking frustrating thing that happens in this game instead of feeling like, ah, I did it. It was just like, oh, now I have to do this again.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially because if you die or if you hit one of the shrines, everything comes back again. So you just have to go through the stuff again.
Yes, that's tough.
It's so rough. So yeah, that was my experience with this. Why it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Personally, which I think just like the last game, it's not a this is a bad game situation. This is a deeply a, oh, this was the wrong game for me.
Right.
Yep.
Situation.
I get that. The thing that I bounced against was that I love, as much as I like open world games, you talk about like The Witcher or like Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead or something where Horizon, where it's open world, you can go anywhere at any time, but you have all these missions and side quests that are like, here's a point on the map or whatever. Or you, mm-hmm. you know, you have a direction to go in, right? It's like, go talk to the elders about the mission or whatever. And this was very much like, there's no waypoints ever.
Yeah. And that I didn't even like touch the fact that, like, you know that I can't figure out like code or like glyphs or anything like that. There's a reason I failed geometry 3 times in high school and it took me 2 years to finish advanced algebra. I can't do that shit. So the manual was useless to me. Even after Jason was like, oh, your fox is on the map or whatever, I looked, I could not find this at all. There was no at which I found this thing. I was like, yeah, this is rough. So yeah, even, oh boy. Yeah, there's no like guiding you really, unless you can kind of figure that stuff out.
We should talk about the fact that the manual, I thought that was maybe the coolest kind of invention of this game, and another nod to the original Zelda and old Mulf games, basically, where your first little mission, the first little like tutorial, couple minutes or whatever, you go and you discover a piece of paper and it's part of a manual, and you go through and you slowly discover pieces of paper and they're pieces of the manual. And they're not only like, one will be the table of contents and one will be like the buttons, like this button does this button does that. One will be like, this obelisk means this, you can do this, you know, like give you some of the lore. Some will be maps where if you're on that screen, it'll actually show the little fox on that screen. But it also is a really good guidepost of if you're on the right path or not, if you're doing the game in the right order. Because you'll be going through, and I did it very much out of order, if there is a wrong order, where I got to a place and I had like pages like most of like 1 through 15, and I picked up page 42. And I was like, oh, I should not be here right now. And that was a good like, okay, this is probably going to be too hard for me. Go and do another path, because at any point you can kind of go on these little branches from the main overworld, right?
So Andrew Scholdos, the creator, said that he wanted players to feel both in combat and outside of it, that they're journeying into unexplored areas or places that they were, quote, not supposed to be right now, unquote.
There you go.
So it's, well, it's supposed to give that feel.
You nailed it right there.
Yeah, totally. That worked. Yeah.
And the different experiences of, you know, Corey, it sounds like you would like to play a game where you are supposed to be there.
Yes.
Ben, you want to be told that you're not supposed to be there and that you're doing the right thing by supposing to be there.
So I can go do something else. So everyone's clear that I'm breaking the rules. I don't want to accidentally break the rules.
Right. So the other game, you know, we talked a lot about the influence of Zelda on this. The other big game that I feel is Souls-likes, right? So Elden Ring.
Obviously.
And this actually came out, I think, a few weeks before Elden Ring or a few weeks after. I have to look that up.
Oh, wow.
But that whole kind of continuity. So, Corey, you mentioned resting at a shrine and then all the enemies are back. That's from Elden Ring, Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, all of those games.
Yeah.
The other thing that it's picking up, and this comes from Metroidvania games as well, is shortcuts. So, you know, you said, it just feels like you are so far from the respawn point, from where you're going to have to come back to. And it's like 2 minutes of running to get there and then, you know, nothing. And the levels, I think the Souls-likes that I played, I think Bloodborne does this the best, where it'll be like on a level that takes you 5 hours to get through, there will only be one respawn point. But as you go through it, right at as you get to the point where you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could ever get back here again. I don't know if I have enough life. You find a switch and you flip that switch and it drops an elevator down to right in front of the respawn point.
Yeah.
And that's this game too, right?
Yeah, this does that a lot.
Hollow Knight did that too, yeah.
That feeling of 2 minutes I'm running and then I just die. It's like, yes, but if you can get through that point, you now can cut the 2 minutes off, right? So it's not like, and then I'll have to run for 3 minutes and then I'll have to run for four. It keeps you right at the end of your leash there about how far, you know. So there's a tension they're playing with, and it might be too far, you know, for some players or for others, but that's definitely kind of an intentional tension that they're playing with there. And then that, blending the exploration of Zelda with that kind of punishing combat of the Souls-like. Man, this game whips. I love this game so much. I had so much fun. I was so excited to not know if I was doing the right thing, to just be playing. And you know how I knew I was in the wrong area? It's because I died right away. I was like, no, I'll go somewhere else then.
With God mode on, you don't realize.
Sure.
Well, that's true. And see, my reaction to dying in something is simply, I don't know how to play this game, instead of, oh, maybe I shouldn't be at this point yet. Right. It's like, right. Oh, yeah. I suck. And that's why I'm here. It's like, what's the place your brain goes when you die? And right. Yeah, it never occurred to me that it was just, oh, I'm just doing this in the wrong order.
Yeah. And I think Elden Ring helped me a lot with that. And Ben, when you started playing Elden Ring, do you remember how much you hated it?
Oh, yeah. The first, I don't know, five to 8 hours. It was like, yeah. I don't know, dude. I got it because it was on sale. Come on.
Everybody's playing it.
Yeah.
And at first, like, I was really tempted to say, no, go do this, go do that, go do this. And I stuck instead to say, if you're not having a good time someplace, just go someplace else.
Yeah.
Because the joy of it is not in me telling you which spots are good and fun to check out, but in you finding them yourself and feeling like, holy crap, I think I found something that no one else has ever seen. It's like, of course it's not true, but it feels like that.
And as soon as I discovered that, like, that lake with all the turtles around it, and I could just, like, just get kill all the turtles and, like,
oh, no. Oh, no.
For a while and just get as many runes as possible. I was like, oh, these aren't dogs. All these things, these notes are wrong. Oh, they're not dogs at all.
No,
I'll
not,
kill the turtles.
Not the turtles.
Get all the rubies.
You monster.
I dislike turtles.
What? I just like turtles.
It's like turtles.
That's when the game became fun. Just like the blue bird, right, Jay, in Tunic? Huh?
Oh, I killed the blue bird the first time I saw it. I'll never forgive myself.
This is another issue, though. Like, what you're kind of bringing up here is the go somewhere else thing. And at times I kind of got that, right? Like, you know, played enough of it that I was like, the idea, if I can't do something, I should go somewhere else. The problem was also that I had a really hard time finding somewhere else to go. So, like, obviously there's a lot of, like, little secret things and stuff like that. And probably I honestly kind of wish I'd streamed this, because you would just hear, if you listened to me play, me smashing my, like, my controller in my lap and going, there's nowhere to go. Just like walking in the same circles around, thinking I found another place, and then coming out at that windmill again and being like, how is the windmill everywhere?
It's always a windmill.
Like, every single time. So I couldn't find another place to go, which was like a huge problem for me.
Did it take you a really long time to get the sword?
No, I think the sword I got like right away.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah, the stick and the sword were immediate.
That was great. It's the game starts you out with a stick as your only weapon for the first, I don't know, half hour or so.
And I wanted to draw attention to how you get the sword. So it's the Eastern Forest Garden. Forest. What is it called, Ben? Forest? All right. There's a lot of places you can explore, but the one that, like, as you're kind of just wandering the overworld, there's like 20 signs that are like, Eastern Forest this way.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I guess I'll go check that out. Right.
Yeah.
And one of the cool things about it is, although you can explore most of the world kind of in any order, the Eastern Forest, when you enter it, there's a ladder leading down and the bottom of the ladder drops away so that once you drop in, you're stuck.
How long it took me
in the Eastern Forest. And I think that's really intentional to avoid, Corey, what you were talking about like now going to wander this other area, wander that area. And at first the Eastern Forest was like impossible. I was like, this combat is so tough. I can't handle it. The role doesn't feel right. Da, 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 da. And by the time I left the Eastern Forest, I was a ninja. And I was like, yes, I've got this down. I can handle anything that the world brings at me. It's like it locks you into a tutorial stage. But at the time, it doesn't feel like it's doing that. It's only in retrospect. At the time, it feels really punishing.
Doesn't
it's
even
like, no,
call
how dare
it
you?
Like tutorial in the game. Because I feel like I was looking at one of the IGN things or whatever. And it like calls that part the tutorial of the game.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. It's like, interesting. Which I also accidentally passed, like that first like tiny little harder guy in there. Mm-hmm. I accidentally rolled into the thing you're supposed to push up to get through the door. And I didn't know it. I accidentally hit X or whatever as I rolled into it and it opened and I ran in and I was like, did I just get through this?
Nice.
That was how I made it through that part, was completely by accident.
Yeah, that first boss in the guardhouse, I think his name is just the guard.
Yeah, I think it's it's the guard or something like that. Tower guard.
I died to him, I want to say a dozen times before getting through. Like, it was really, really tough.
And all the while, you could have accidentally just rolled into that thingy and pushed it up. You didn't have to beat him.
There you go.
I'm glad I did. It felt really good to beat him. It was fun.
Yeah.
We got to get into lore at some point, because I still, even having beat the game, I don't fully understand maybe even like a small percentage of what the lore is. This is like Hollow Knight level. Like, I beat the game, but I don't know what happened, really.
Also, just before you get into the lore, just real quick, how long did it take you? You know, I'm always curious.
Oh, gosh. How Let me check real quick.
Do you know, Jay?
16 hours and 48 minutes.
63? Oh, God. 16.
Okay. 17 hours, Ben. It's 17.
17 hours ish. Okay.
Mine's going to be a little wrong because my kids played the first 5 hours. I hadn't done anything because I just turned it on. I got the sword and the shield and my kids just played. And then the last probably hour after I beat the game, God mode was still on. I was like, kids, just like have fun. You can't die. Do whatever you want. But 14, just under 14 hours. So I don't know, probably closer to like.
Oh, so you got through it pretty quick.
Yeah, but I turned on God mode.
Yeah.
Jason didn't turn God mode on until the very end.
That makes sense.
Yes. And that's the thing is, I think I'd say like 95% of people who beat this game will turn on God mode at some point. And probably. It's a question of when you do. By the way, when you do translate the manual, there's a little place that says check under accessibility for an easier option. You can turn it on at any time. There's no reason not to. There's no reason to feel bad about it. It's OK. Yeah, yeah. Thumbs up. And it's like,
this is a thing that I have taken from Momf, is the like, if it's not fun, turn on the thing that makes it easier. I used to have like the oh, I shouldn't do that kind of situation. And over the course of this podcast, I've realized like, why wouldn't I want to play it the funner way?
Yeah.
Just going to turn on the accessibility thing and have a better time.
I'm glad I didn't turn it on until I did turn it on. Like, I turned it on at the right moment for myself.
Right. Yeah.
Because like, it was fun to beat the guard. Like, it was really fun to work up to that and do it. The section that I turned it on at is the mines, the quarry, where there is an atmosphere around you that lowers your max HP until you are down to just one HP. So if somebody sneezes on you, you die and you have to start all the way back from the beginning.
Is that the part that I sent you guys that?
Yes, the headache part.
The headache part. Yeah. That was where I was like, you know what? It's time to stop playing. Because I did the accessibility feature that stopped the blinking of the lights, but it was still so bright that I was like, I was grinding my teeth and stuff like that. It was giving me such a headache that I was like, this is my out. We're done playing this game.
So the funny thing is, I actually made it really far through there before turning on God mode. Mm-hmm. Like, I almost got to the kind of second stage of that after you drop below the mines. And you get the gun and you get this. It was actually in the getting the gun that I turned it on, because I kept running out into that little ledge where there's three dudes with guns, and I kept getting two of them and the third one would get me. And it would always be, it wasn't like the same order. It was, you know, I roll through here, I'm timing it, I'm fine. And then suddenly, like, I'm facing off against this guy, this third guy, and suddenly some other random rat from the other side of the map is like, bomb! And just throws a bomb over a cliff and kills me. Oh my God. I'm like, why? So after dying like 10 times in a row in the exact same spot, I was just like, turn it on. And it was the right time, because after that, it gets so much tougher.
Yeah.
Did you keep it on from that point forward, or did you flick it on?
No, I kept it on.
Yeah.
I will say, as someone who used to feel a lot of guilt, or at least I was very torn about turning on cheats and God mode and that kind of thing, I say that, but I still loved Game Genie, Game Shark on N64, Invincibility mode, you know, and finding out cheats and like GoldenEye and stuff like that, all the whole cheat menu that's included in that. I think cheat menu in GoldenEye was a big like eye opener to be like, oh, this is a part of the game. They're encouraging
you built like this.
To play with these bugs or whatever. Yeah. And then like Super Star Wars for NES, where it was like up, left, down, right, B, A, A, and you can like turn into Chewbacca or do God mode or whatever, unlimited ammo, that kind
of
thing.
All the things in Doom, I mean.
yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, endless. And the thing that kind of pushed me over the edge to feel no guilt about it was Right to Repair and that whole like law thing that's been happening for the past 5 to 10 years with iPhones specifically, but with all sorts of devices that are like, should people have the right to repair their devices on their own without having to take that device back to Apple or whatever company it came from, which the people won that. And we can then now like Apple has to, I don't even know the process, but like certify a bunch of people to be able to like, people can fix their own phones now without breaking the warranties. That kind of what it came down to, if they can. But the whole idea that like your devices are yours, your game is yours. It should work how you want it to work. If it's not working for you, change it up. Turn on God mode, turn on invincibility, turn on invisibility, whatever, unlimited ammo. If that's the way you can have fun, then that's the way you should be able to do it.
Yeah.
Especially like the older I get, the more like work I have, kids, spouse, it's just like, I have less time dedicated to video games every day. So I don't want to spend yeah. those hours or whatever, or that whatever
in
time,
frustration.
Like in frustration. Exactly. I'd rather, even if it is like less fulfilling to beat the game, I'd rather right. beat the game in God mode and have more fun than have 90% frustration with like, oh, I actually did it.
Yeah. So. Right. That sense of accomplishment afterwards.
Yeah. Especially with a deadline like Monf, right? With Elden Ring, it was different because I was like, I could play this for 6 months.
Right.
And yeah. have fun and frustration mixed in every single day. And I didn't have a deadline on it. So that's, I mean, we mentioned this every couple of games, but it's like,
right.
part of it is we only have 3 weeks to play these games. So yeah. we can't necessarily be like, I'll just put in half hour a day or whatever. It's like, right. that's not, sorry, you got to finish the game at some yeah. point.
Sometimes, you know, well, especially because I don't have kids or anything like that. Sometimes it's like, all right, I can put in like 8 hours a day on this for like, three or 4 days and just really go hard. Mm-hmm. And then other times it's like, I do not have 30 minutes to put yeah. into this entire time.
Totally.
So it does make a difference.
For sure.
Yeah, but Core, like, I think you would be disappointed with a game that wasn't difficult enough also, right? Like, yes. if Hades yeah. was, like, that, like, geared back a step.
Yeah,
so, exactly. yeah, I just want to be clear that, like, that spot is different from everyone, and it's different yeah. with each game. There are, I mean, I have not played Death's Door, and I bet definitely for a while, I would be a lot worse at it than Corey.
Yeah.
And a lot more frustrated by it.
Right, yeah.
But you want that sweet spot of difficulty. And mm-hmm. finding that, it just differs for each person and each kind of play style. Yeah.
Even in Death's Door, like, I remember the first time that I played through it, that I thought that, like, the final boss was too hard to be fun. I was like, this is too much. Like, I have been playing and losing and dying for so long that this isn't fun. And then obviously having beat it like 5 times now.
Yeah.
Like one time just with an umbrella. Yeah. One time with just an umbrella. Like it still takes me several tries to beat that guy, but it's not like an unfun difficulty. So you're totally right, Jason. It's like not only is what that difficulty is different between people, but even in your own experience of the game, it can switch just based on like what clicks for you at what time or when you get that, like, Ben, you're talking about, like, the endorphin rush, yeah. you know? Like, yeah. if you feel accomplished at the end of it, it covers all of that, like, frustration that you had before.
And I think normally I'd be with you. I mean, you talked earlier about how if there had been difficulty settings, mm-hmm. You would have preferred that. And normally I'm there and just, like, you know, let me do the difficulty settings on everything. Let me play mm-hmm. with... I've been playing Madden on my 3DS, and I can change the AI for my defense's interceptions and the other yeah. person's defense's interceptions. Like, you can just fine tune everything. And it's great when you're not having a good time and you just keep getting like feeling like, oh, every game, the same thing happens to me. Like, you just change this little lever there and you're having fun again.
Changing sliders, right? Like on sports games, they have 1,000 sliders for things.
Yeah, right? just changing the sliders.
Yeah.
So there's two reasons that I'm a little bit kind of interested in why they made this decision for Tunic to not have that no difficulty and instead just a universal kind of accessibility option of you're just invincible. Right. Turn it on when you feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, such a small team, it's really difficult to introduce sliders
yeah.
like that. It's really difficult to do that kind of really granular accessibility stuff.
Right.
I think they did a lot of stuff to try and open that up. But I'm trying to lower my expectations for them and what they want to do. Second off, I think that there's something nice to retaining that sense of difficulty and I want to beat this and I want to get that with having the just and then I tap out and then mm-hmm. I'm just like, and no, I don't want to now. Right. It's a simple yes or no.
Yeah.
So that when I don't tap out, it still feels really good to have done it.
Anything, any more gameplay things before we get to our drinking song?
Yeah. Was there so. Obviously, I have explained all my frustration of fighting and things like that. But like, yeah. obviously, there must have been things that like you really loved about playing.
We should
this.
Talk about that
so
stuff. Yeah,
we should talk about, aside from my hating it, what were the gameplay factors that like really
interesting,
really rocked your boat?
So I was talking to a friend about this and I got him into playing it and he was like, I was playing it and it was really tough. And then I was like, Oh, I can do this. And like, I discovered a secret that just like, I felt like was only meant for me and like nobody else found it. And I was like, yes,
you're going, couple of those.
You're going to have yeah. that experience once per hour for yeah. the next 12 hours.
Yes. He's
like, dude, this is the greatest game ever.
Yeah.
And that's that feeling every hour, right? And it deals it out to you, like, in a very metered way, even though it's not linear, even though it's, you know, everybody plays it differently. It's just kind of perfectly constructed to just hand out that little, like, you found something once per hour.
Unless you're me.
Right. Very Elden Ring in that way.
Unless you play this game the way I do, in which case.
And that was, Corey, you said something about, like, looking up things that, like, I never would have found that. And I'm like, or you just find it just by hitting everything. And it's like, that was not my experience of finding the secrets.
Right. Right.
So I found one of the earlier secrets I found. I was walking along and I was like, oh, this path that I'm on actually continues around the corner. Right. You can't see it from here because it's behind a tree, but you can see the edge of it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, let me walk up there and, oh, it puts me next to a waterfall. I've played video games before. I know there's something behind a waterfall.
Waterfalls are secrets.
Which is right. We referenced this in Elden Ring, how one of the funniest bits in Elden Ring is that there's nothing behind any of the waterfalls.
Yeah.
In the whole game, there's tons of waterfalls and there's nothing behind any of them.
A lot of times there's a little cave back there, though.
Right. There'll be a cave and with nothing in it. Until there is one area of the game that is really difficult to get to. And it's got like 8 waterfalls and every single one of them has an item behind it. And it's, I just think that's hilarious. Like, that's just mean level design where they're like, no, we know stuff goes behind waterfalls.
Very intentional.
Here's a bunch of random stuff. Are you happy now? Anyway, Tunic, there's stuff behind waterfalls.
Ooh, I will say probably once a year, there's a thing that Jason or I or Corey do where we're like, no way did you do that without finding the secret or looking it up.
Oh, yeah. Ben's got an impressive one.
And mine is one I've just very stupidly stumbled upon that Jason was like, no way, dude. How did you do that? Come on, stop lying. I'm like, I don't think I'm lying. Like, I didn't look up a lot of gameplay. Like, once you have God mode on, I just asked Jason things. I didn't really look up any tutorials. Unless it was like, where is this land or something like that? Just make sure I was going to the right spot. But there's this one like golden obelisk at the kind of the top of the overworld where it just has like these different, like it looks like the game of Snake, right? It's just like up, down, left, right, like little thing.
Yeah.
And it has like a symmetrical design on it. And at one point I just saw it and was like, what if it's a maze and I have to like get through the maze with my D-pad? So I just went like, I just followed it. I went like down, left, right, right, up, down, or whatever. And I did it. And as soon as I did it, it did like my version of a Zelda, like, where like you like discover a secret passage in a dungeon. And like it gave me a laser gun wand, it, like gave me a brand new weapon that just like appeared. And I was like, I don't know. I think that was related to what I did. I'm not 100% sure because that seemed like a stupid thing to do. But that's how lost I was in the game that I was just like, I'll just trace this invisible maze that means nothing. And that was like the literal key to a lot of the things, because there's dozens of these things I discovered after this on the wall, on doors, where if you just trace it with your D-pad, it opens the door or it gives you a key or it gives you hearts or whatever. It was just like, that seems like something that was very much a thing where I was like, there's no way anyone in the world would ever figure this out except for me. Because I randomly, completely stupidly was like, oh, I'll just trace it like a maze. But that was silly that worked.
I love that.
So let me show you my favorite puzzle in the game. It's absolutely stupid. I completed it, but I did have to look up the answer.
Okay.
Right? So you are discovering a bunch of different secrets. You're discovering these manual pages, and eventually you get one. And by the way, very early on, you get this one that just shows the fox sitting outside the door to the mountain.
The mountain that I, at the point, had discovered... The door was closed. And so it's just a picture of me next to the door I can't open.
Yep. Now, the facing page, though, has this helpful thing.
It's like a gold blanket thing with a bunch of... Oh, it's like a bingo card.
Yep. It looks like a bingo card. Like a golden bingo card. And the most important feature there is the word golden. Because what that is each of those are page numbers. So if we look at 48, for example...
Oh, I did not.
Can you see a golden line on that page?
I don't think I can from here.
I think you can because it's actually bigger than you think. It's what the fox is pointing to.
Oh, the thing in the map there.
Right? Yeah. And so on every single page, it's something big and obvious like that.
And a golden design.
Right.
And it's like the same thing where a maze where it's like up, left, down, right, up, left or something like that.
Uh-huh.
A D-pad.
So there's the one on page. Check out the one on page 11. Right.
The one on page 11 is a big golden thing in the middle.
It's pointing from one. It's like a key telling you which part of the image is something else. Right.
Sure.
But it's a jagged line because you thought when you saw page 11 that it was just a design thing. And it's like, no, that's part of the solution to the puzzle. So what if you traced each of those lines onto its square in that image I showed you earlier?
Right.
Well, this is what you would have. I'm going to send you that. Check it out in the chat.
Oh, you sent me a link. This is, I feel like you need to think about podcasting more when we podcast, Jason. how to monitor Golden Path solution. How to open mountain door. Oh, he's so sad.
Scroll down till you see that image I showed you, but now with the actual line.
Oh, so this map, rather than like when I got my golden laser, it was like up, left, down, right, up, and I got it. This is, I won't do the whole thing. Up, left, down, left, up, left, down, left, up, right, up, left, down, right, up, left, up, sweet left. I lost already. I'm not even a quarter of the way done. And I'm just doing it verbally. I'm not doing it on the D-pad. But there's, I don't know, 80 different directions on this?
I'd say, 80 to 100.
Yeah.
And Ben, by the way, those lines where it breaks one of the lines, that means you have to press it twice.
Oh, my God.
I do have to let you know that I got it on the first try.
Wow. Well done.
Feeling when you're coming down the home stretch, when you're on the last few turns.
Oh my God, I would mess it up. I know myself well enough. I've shot enough free throws in my life to know.
It's like fighting one of the bosses.
Yes.
Right? Except you've got no health. You're not going to die.
Except, there's one line of health left. Yeah, exactly.
But it's the same thing. You've just got to start over. Right? That's horrible. Don't actually die in the game anyway. All you do is start over.
Right.
So it's literally the exact same feeling. Anyway, just wanted to show you that. I don't know how much that'll get across to the reader. Or the listener, but Google Tunic open mountain door, and you'll see the example. It's insane. Also, behind it is one more page of the manual.
Because when you beat the game, it's like, good job. You're missing a couple pages, though, right? Like that's but you didn't quite finish the game.
And you were missing like six, right?
I was missing five, I think.
When I beat the game, I was missing two. I went and got those two. And now I completed the game again last night.
So what's different about the ending? Can we get to that?
All right. We're going to spoil it right now. The ending.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler
alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. There are only two endings to this game. First off, lore-wise, early on in the game, there's this giant figure. Me and Ben both thought it was our mom. Corey, what did you think it was?
In what part of the game?
Did it look like Glee to you?
Where in the game was this?
A giant fox. There's a giant blue fox.
There's like the blue ghost figure that's like stuck in like a dodecahedron.
Oh, okay.
She's in all the cutscenes.
It did not occur to me that this was Glee. No.
It looked exactly like her.
No. Did you think that this was the fox's mom?
Oh, is that what you thought, Jay?
I had no guesses on anything that was happening in this game, so. No.
I'm concerned you don't think about Glee enough, but whatever.
So there's a giant blue figure, and I think that most players' understanding of the lore at the time is that this figure is maybe the princess or the prince. Gender is somewhat ambiguous.
She's like five times the size of the fox, which is princesses can't be big, but I was like, oh, she seems like an adult and I'm a child.
Locked in stasis, and my job is to free her.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. Also, how much of me even thinking that she's a woman is because I'm playing a video game and she seems to be the trophy.
I think she's wearing a dress, right. But men can wear dresses too.
So am I. I'm wearing a tunic. Get it?
Good point. All good points.
Well, that's a good point.
So about two-thirds of the way through the game, you finally...
Is a tunic just a dress?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know what I thought a tunic was.
About two-thirds of the way through the game, you finally unlock her cage. And you're like, sweet, I freed the princess. I win the game. And she comes down and wails on you. And just murders you like instantly.
Which, again... Very similar to mom.
And she's the toughest boss ever. And invincibility mode does nothing.
I mean...
That's more Michelle energy than Glee energy, but...
I was about to say, that's definitely more...
I think my favorite part about this is that later Ben will be like, why did it take you so long to summarize the plot of the game?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, Ben. I don't know. Why?
I'll cut all this out, don't worry.
Good.
I'll keep the bath stuff in, though.
So then finally... Finally, you're able to get back to fight this enemy again. And the first time you play through it, or, assuming you don't have all the manuals, it is just like the toughest fight ever. This is the fight that we said is tougher than Millennia. There's the first phase, which was really tough. And Ben was like, I don't know if it's tougher than Millennia, but it's like, it's really tough. It's up there. And then she goes to the second phase where every sword blow lowers your max HP. Mm. And even if it doesn't hit you, it just gets near you.
That's insane.
And then you accomplish that, win the game, and then it cuts to a fox being locked up in the cage. And Ben, my interpretation of that was that is me being locked up, right? The lore you figured out is that she was too strong, and she had to be locked up because she was a threat. She was a danger to everyone else. Mm. By killing her, you have now proven that you are too strong and you are a threat and you have to be locked up. Now, that's my interpretation of the lore.
Isn't this Hollow Knight?
Mm. I know, as you're done, I'm like, I feel like this is Hollow Knight.
Didn't the same exact thing happen? I know there's like 8 endings in Hollow Knight.
Let me give you the second ending.
Okay. Yeah, please. So that's what happened in mine, right? If you don't have all the, right. the pages. Okay.
So second ending, you get the all the manuals. You go enter again. Same sequence as before. She grabs the sword. She comes closer to you. And you just put up the manual. You just hand it to her. And she leans down and she picks it up. And she turns a page. And she turns another page. And another. And then for a while, I'm staring at her. And what? Her eyes, they just add a little bit more reflection to her eyes.
Oh, my gosh.
So it looks like maybe she's tearing up a bit.
She's just a frustrated gamer.
And her thumb goes up and wipes away the tears. And then it goes to credits.
Oh, my gosh.
But this time on the credits, all those spots where you saw. So the first time through the credits, it's just all these locations in the game. It's really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's both of you together in each of those locations.
No.
Like reading magazines, watching TV, hanging out, and you're just BFFs. And that's the end of the game. Like just hang out and have fun now that you found the manual.
What?
So good. It's so good.
It really is a frustrated gamer.
Yeah.
You've fixed the game.
How do I play this game?
Yeah.
And now they know.
Am I the fox? Am I the big blue fox?
Aww.
Here's the manual, Corey. You don't have to hurt anyone.
Amazing.
You've only been hurting yourself.
Wow.
Let's go frolic.
This is so autobiographical.
This is like the amazing. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 to Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1. Here's the manual.
Truly.
It fixed the game.
Hate you.
Thank you.
Love it so much. Love it so much.
All right.
But
So, that's beautiful. I love that. I wish I hadn't done New Game Plus. And I wish I'd instead gone back to the part that's just like, just find all the manual pages, because I'm not going to beat the whole game again. But I'll definitely go back and watch that on YouTube, because that sounds really cool. I'm glad. That seems like a very fulfilling ending to this at times frustrating game. Did you make it all up?
He thought he was April Fool'sing. Yeah, I'm just kidding, yeah, you exactly. guys. It's obviously not how this game ended.
All right.
Okay, what's next?
Trinket Song? Are we done with game? I feel like maybe did gameplay
I
things?
I think so.
Do we have any more gameplay things?
I think we've covered it.
No, I just wanted to get to that That's essence great. Of those mysteries and how complex they are. So I'm glad.
All right, what's the drink? What's the song? This game's pretty fun. With frustration, when I was all done, I just had two questions. What's the beer? What's the song? I can't always tell. I just wanna know what game is West D12. Alright, who wants to go first?
I will.
Do it.
My beer is Jester King Snorkel. I chose this beer because it's a Saison and I love Saisons. But let me just read the ingredients list real quick.
Oh, that's French for our next game.
There we go. That's a hint. That's a,
is it?
That's a clue. We're not going to tell you our next game.
Wink.
That was the golden line in our manual.
I like how someone listening to this is like, wait, snorkel's a French word? Keep going. Sorry.
Snorkel is a farmhouse ale brewed with alderwood smoked sea salt and oyster mushrooms.
No. What?
I love an oyster mushroom.
For this batch, we used golden oyster mushrooms grown by Small Holden Austin. We added both mushrooms and a smoked sea salt hot side during the boil. Aside from the adjunct ingredients, we kept it pretty simple with this dry, drinkable farmhouse ale. Unfiltered, unpasteurized, naturally conditioned. It's tasty.
Wow.
Imagine a Saison with a little bit of a gosa to it. Just some saltiness. And kind of those earth tones of the mushrooms coming through. It's real nice. And to me, it felt like the beer that you would find in a goblin horde, in a musty treasure room.
Cave.
This is an in-world beer. This is definitely the beer that Tunic will drink when Tunic is old enough to drink. Right now, Tunic's mom won't let Tunic drink.
Right. Although it looks like it's Britain, so Tunic might be drinking already, right?
That's a very good point.
You think they're from Britain?
Yeah. Well, they won the BAFTA thing, so they must be British, right?
Oh, is that how it works? But wait, American things can't win BAFTAs?
I don't think so.
Really? I didn't realize that. I thought it was like the Academy Awards, but just in Britain.
No, I think it's specifically British. I could be wrong, but I think it's specifically British made things.
Let's not look it up.
Yeah, let's just like make assumptions instead.
That sounds great. All right. So from now on, it's decided you have to be British to win a BAFTA. Cool. All right. Mm-hmm. Corey.
Those are the rules. Sorry to any American. That's one.
Both of these nuts.
Both. Oh, the thing.
You were just sitting on it. You were just waiting. Like no one's gonna bite. No one's.
That's what you do. You just sit on them, Corey.
Corrigan, what's your drink?
I was going to put this to you because I don't know. I'm not sure. What do you think defines my experience of this game?
Oh, I thought you just meant skip and do mine. So yeah, Jay, let's talk about this. This is a game that Corey was really excited about, and then it was a massive disappointment, but she still couldn't stop doing it.
Mm. Is she talking about your relationship?
Is it? Yeah.
Oh,
that's good. Is it? And she quit on it for a while, but then came back.
Uh-huh. Regretted coming back.
totally regretted it. Is it Jägermeister? I feel like Jägermeister is one of those things where I was like, this is cool. Ooh. People do this at parties. And the first sip, I was like, this is bad. Why does anyone drink this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that work?
I think that might be
it.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
That's it.
Or Goldschlager or some sort of like party. Okay, yeah.
It's also got that. No, I like Jäger because it's got that obsessive quality of the Jäger refrigeration system that they've got at the bars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Jäger dispenser. Yeah, it's built in. Yeah. It's its own special thing. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Jaeger.
That's fun.
Awesome. Sweet.
Well played.
Good job, team.
How about you, Ben?
I went with eggnog because this game, it's a treat that I really am glad it's in my life that I discovered at an older age. I didn't like eggnog till like 3 years ago. And I really like it like once a year. And I love it while I'm drinking it or while I'm playing it. But I couldn't play it year round because it'd just be too much. It's a little too much to be year round. So it's like a special treat every once in a while. And it goes better with bourbon.
Nice.
So yeah, and my song is the Zelda theme song, just like the classic.
Of
like
course.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Link, he came to town. He came to save the Princess
Thank you.
Zelda.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The System of the Down version of Zelda.
Link, he come to town. Come to save the Princess Zelda. Gone and took her away. Now the children don't play. But they will when Link sees it dead.
As labeled by Napster.
Yeah. Yes. What was it? Wasn't it actually them?
I doubt it was actually System of a Down. Fair. I think that's just what it said when you downloaded it.
That's fair. All right. Just like, what was the other one? Oh, the it actually wasn't the song hook.
It was the gourds of Gin and Juice.
Of Gin and Juice. Exactly right. Whereas they were like Dave Matthews Band. It was labeled
the gourds cover of Gin and Juice. Yes, was always Blues Traveler plus Radiohead plus Collective Soul plus any search term that will get us other people to download.
Yes, exactly. That was great.
And it worked, didn't it?
Oh, Rod Stewart sings Gin and Juice.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, this to me was just Zelda the whole time, the good and the bad. It's just a modern Zelda, which I realize we have modern Zelda. But I enjoyed this more than I did Breath of the Wild, that's for sure. So classic Zelda theme insert here. Yeah. Corey, what do you got? You have a song?
Yes, which goes along the same lines of how you determined my drink for this. My song for this is Switchfoot's The Beautiful Letdown.
Oh, no.
For two reasons, because the title is pretty on the nose. It's a beautiful game. I like looking at it, but I hated it. And also because, as you know, I was a giant Switchfoot fan. And then when The Beautiful Letdown came out, I was like, oh, this album sucks.
Oh, no.
And I was so upset that I'd been looking forward to it for so long. I had already, you know, invested in posters, was super excited about it. And then that album came out and I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
So this is what they sound like now.
And this is a game for the dropouts, losers, sinners, and failures and fools. So.
Well, there you go.
It was a beautiful letdown.
God, I love that. I love that album.
Ben held on to Switchfoot a little longer than I did. Yeah.
I love that album. And I mean, the next album with stars on it. Remember when we saw them do that live?
Yeah.
And it was just like, this is thrice
Switchfoot. This was amazing. It was like the heaviest song, and then nothing else on the future album sounded anything like that.
And nothing else was like that. Yeah, it was like there's like two or three songs I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that were really good on the next one.
That's what's so wild. It took them. It was when their music sucked that they finally blew up.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Like Legend of Chin is so good.
Yeah, it's like they got really, really popular. Now, every now and again, I will still hear them on the radio or whatever. And I'm like, it just sounds like Christian music.
Yeah. When they were Christian music, they didn't sound like Christian music.
They didn't sound like Christian music. Yeah. And then they found that sound. And now I'm like, meh.
Yep.
Pass.
I saw them with Reliant K probably like 5 years ago now in yeah. Reading.
Recently.
And stayed for all of Reliant Amazing. K. But I was like, they're different than they used to be.
Reliant K.
Yeah. And it's just it's not great. And stayed for Switchfoot for like two songs and was like, I'm out, dude. John just thinks he's Bono now. And it's.
Yeah, like straight up. He has like he's got the biggest like, yeah. Ego vibe.
Yeah, mega church energy.
All of the like CCM. Yeah, mega church energy, yeah. Big time. Like, I think that came from being the kind of like not Christian rock, and then staying where like yeah. all the other bands who are like that kind of left totally. Christian yeah. rock and they stayed and like leaned in, but still kept the reputation of like, oh, we're not like that right. kind
they
of
just have thoughtful music, lyrics,
you know. Right, yeah.
Not necessarily Christian lyrics, yeah.
Yeah, so he's definitely, I think the Bono of Christian music is very much John Foreman at this point.
Yeah, it was him like putting on, he was like acting, not, I know it's a show, it's literally a show.
Yeah. Right, but
it felt just very inauthentic.
Inauthentic,
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, anyway. Totally. What's up, Jay? What are you sharing? What do you got? What's your song?
Oh, I got my song. It is, and I think the title alone fits, it's Stick Season. By Noah Kahan.
Is it Noah Kahan?
Maybe.
K-A-H-A-N?
Yeah, is it Kahan?
It's Kahan.
Okay.
I only know this because Joy Ladakun is obsessed with
him. Okay, Noah Kahan.
So, and Kristen is.
I believe it's pronounced Got-Yi.
Got-Yi. Yeah. Anyway, the lyrics also apply. We'll talk about them in a second. Once called me forever, now you still can't call me back. And I love Vermont, but it's the season of the sticks that I saw your mom. She forgot that I existed, and it's half my fault, but I just like to play the victim. I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, and I'll dream each night. I just got introduced to this song this month. I really liked it, and I can draw some connections that I was finding myself drawing more while I was listening again. But of course, just the title, Stick Season, right? And you've got your stick in the game.
You got your stick.
I like a good straightforward reason.
Right. The song says the word stick, just like the game.
And I also had a stick.
Leo meme.
In the game.
I saw your mom. She forgot that I existed. That is, of course, whoever that is in the game that you're supposed to get.
Yep. Just like Lee.
It's half my fault, but I just like to play the victim. Yes, you want to keep saying that, like, you're the hero of this game. And you've got to like save the day and everything. But it's like clearly by the end, especially in the bad ending, it's circled back and it's at least half your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I think I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas. Just feels like that last third of the game where there's just ghosts all around and you're just kind of hanging out and they'll interact with you, but you can't quite get all that meaning. You're just waiting for them to come home, even though they're almost there. Anyway.
It reminds me of like Weaker Than's vibes, but like Vampire Weekend. Acoustic, just trying to do a Weaker Than's cover almost.
Interesting.
You see any of that? Very Jason.
FYI, he does have a song with Joy Ladakun. I believe it's called Someone Like You.
Okay.
So, FYI.
There you go.
Something to check
go
out.
Check it out.
Oh, Joy. She's everywhere.
I know. It's so wild. that's our biggest of all of our gets on Electric Fan Cave. That's
oh,
our
bet.
Biggest. And it was just because she's a friend.
That's awesome. How'd you meet Joy?
She went to Vanguard.
Oh, there you go. Wow, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I knew that at one point. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
She's a Vanguard girl.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Recommendation station.
Recommendations, a station.
Choo-choo!
I was going to be the recommendation station to get good ideas on what to watch or listen to.
A lot of PGA 23. For the first time, I played with Tyler, Brent,
and Sean last night. We did a little foursome. We played through the Middle Earth course, and the whole thing tells this, all 18 holes tell the story of Middle Earth. And like hole 17, you're actually like, it's a par three where you're chipping into Mount Doom to like the middle little platform above the like fiery lava in the middle. It's pretty great. It's, you like start in Hobbiton. There's like little hobbit holes everywhere. It's a beautiful course.
When you play with friends, is it like you're just kind of like watching each other?
Yeah, just like
golfing, like you talk over the headsets or whatever.
You can do it both ways. But yeah, we're like, you're just kind of playing your own game. You're playing the same thing at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And it would be a lot faster. But we played where we're like watching each other hit every single ball and we're just talking the whole time.
Is it like a, do you use like a controller or is it like a physical, like you swing something?
No, it's just play. Using a PS5 controller or Xbox controller or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, we got people on like Xbox Series X's. We got people on, I'm on Xbox One. Tyler's on PS5. It's nice to like cross-gen and we can all talk.
Yeah.
It's so nice. It's so nice.
I like how so many of these games cross over. That was when we were playing Evil Dead. That was like so fun that it was like someone's playing on a PC and someone's playing on an Xbox and we're playing on PS5 and we're all playing together. Yep. It's like, that's so crazy that you can do that now.
Yeah, yeah.
We live in the future.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been playing that like every day. So that's my main thing.
Nice.
What else? What do you guys got? Oh, real quick, actually, Dungeons and Dragons. I always forget the subtext. The movie that just came out. Hannah saw it with Olivia yesterday because we've been playing. We played our first two campaigns as a family this past week.
Oh, nice.
The movie just came out. We have friends that are super into D&D. So Hannah took our eldest to go see Dungeons and Dragons. They loved it.
I was going to go see it. I've heard great things.
But it's also Olivia's first PG-13 movie in theaters because we've watched Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and stuff.
Jurassic Park, exactly.
So we knew she was okay for it. But she came back and she was like, of course, because it's the first movie she's seen in theater since Sonic 3 years ago. Since when she was six, by the way. So she's like, now D&D is her personality. So we're just going to start playing all the time. Pretty awesome. But yeah, they had a great time.
Does she have a crush on any of the people in the movie?
I don't know if she'd tell me if she
would
did.
Would she say that to you yet?
I don't know.
Yeah, she's maybe not quite there yet.
She might be having feelings about it that she's not sure what to do with. But
I'm like, there's just like a lot of pretty people in that movie between, you know,
Michelle Rodriguez,
Reggie Jean Page. You've got Michelle Rodriguez, you've got everybody going in that thing. So, you know,
but yeah, they had a great time. So recommendation for that, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to try to see that this week on one of my down days, because this is the way that I travel. I go and do things and then I just really like to spend like an entire day not doing anything.
Totally.
Well, I'm desperate to get back to my own video games at some point and play things that I want to play. Luckily, Tunic was really fun, and I enjoyed that. But I haven't played anything, right? Like,
you've been obsessed with Tunic the past 2 weeks, yeah.
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 And so I, you know, last time I said, oh, Demon's Souls is amazing, I love it. I haven't been able to start it up since we last played, but I would like to get back to that at some point. I think I told you I hacked the hell out of my 3DS.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now that the store is actually done, the e-store has died. Now you have no excuse not to hack your 3DS.
Yeah.
Right. You're never getting those games. Go hack it. It's fun. Just Google it. There's a whole website that'll teach you how. It's easy. I definitely recommend it. And no complications about that at all. But I've been playing Dragon Quest V on that. And that's fun just to play like a 30-year-old game and just kind of vibe with it. It's really fun. It's just like, if you distill down a role-playing game to like its simplest pieces, it's Dragon Quest V, right? And it's just, nice. you just hit fight and go to the next thing and it's great. And you just keep fighting.
Yeah. Cor, what do you got?
Nothing really this time around, probably because also it's a little close to when we last recorded.
True.
But yeah, because I've been playing Tunic and then other than that, you know, in between just sort of playing Dreamlight Valley, which I'm starting to like wear out on. It doesn't have the staying power of Animal Crossing.
100%.
You know, after a while, it's like, I don't know. I think because, you know, in Animal Crossing, there's like kind of a fun thing about like planting your stuff and like, you know, tending, making your home look nice and things like that. And I like want to do those things, but then there's all these quests in the way and stuff like that. But then also those quests, sometimes you just get totally stuck and so it's like I still have a shitty house and mess everywhere and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, don't feel like I'm getting into the portions of it where it's just kind of like relaxing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And yet it's not exciting enough doing the quests for that to be fulfilling in and of itself. So I don't know. It's keeps you occupied or whatever, but mostly, you know, it was just kind of getting sick of that one. So I don't know, when I get back in a few weeks, we'll see what I pick up, you know, like yeah. I'm going to be thinking about that. I've seen The Quarry has gone on sale. I've thought about getting that because a lot of people really like that. But I'm also like kind of iffy on those kinds of, I don't know, I always call them choose your own adventure games. I don't know what you're really supposed to call them, yeah. but those games where you're just like, it's basically a story and you're just yeah. picking what people's decisions are going to be. So I don't know. We'll see what I end up doing. And next month I will hopefully have something that I'm hooked on again. Sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
One more recommendation. Sorry. Yesterday, I just read through the entirety of Alan Carr's Easy Way to Stop Smoking. I'd heard it recommended.
Oh, that's supposed to be the fixer.
It's supposed to be the one.
That's,
and I by yeah. the end, I started it very skeptical. I think Ben has given me lots of skeptical looks because he's like, you are smoking again? I think is what he's trying to be saying.
Because you posted on Twitter like, yeah, tomorrow's my last day of smoking. I was like, I'm so confused.
I was like, oh, are we doing this?
Didn't we do this like 5-10 years ago?
All of the people close to Jason are like,
Ben, I challenge you. I don't think anyone was confused.
We're not. I am.
You are?
What do you mean? I don't understand.
I think you read it and were like, oh, I think he's been smoking again.
Well, yeah.
I don't think that was confusing.
No, my takeaway was like, oh, it's a reference to something in this article or
no.
book.
Oh, okay. No. The last few months has been pretty stressful. And mm-hmm. gave in, started smoking again, and it was rough. And always before, I've used, you know, willpower. I've used Nicorette, which is also like bad for my teeth and stuff like that.
Mm. Right.
Is it really? Is it? Why would they do? I guess so.
It's got sugar in it too, right?
Yeah, it's bad for your teeth. Oh, and it's terrible for your immune system also.
Oh my God. I guess that makes sense. You're just chewing cigarettes.
Yeah, basically.
Can all see right. how that would be. Yeah.
So this one is like, you're not going to use any substitutes. Like not nicotine gum and not like gum, like
right.
chew a stick of gum because you want a stick of
don't
gum.
Don't do oral
not
fixation
because you're trying to undo cigarettes.
Yeah.
And right. don't use any willpower. That's always the really exciting part about it. It's like you're not going to have to use willpower.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Instead, you'll just be a non-smoker now. And the thing he goes through, like if you want the secret of the book,
please.
It's basically that like it's a purely psychological addiction.
Is it really?
It's kind of, yeah.
It's kind of mixed. Like it comes in physically. Okay. But yeah. it gives you a psychological addiction.
Sure.
In other words, the physical dependence is like almost nothing. That is not the addiction.
Really?
The withdrawal you go through is you go through the majority of it. All nicotine is out of your body in 3 days.
Okay.
So after that time period, you are no longer doing any withdrawal stuff.
Gotcha.
And he's like, nicotine withdrawals start 45 minutes after you smoke a cigarette. You go through withdrawals every single night. And you're fine and you don't care. They are nothing.
Right.
They will not bother you.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Instead, start to think
it's
about
thinking
like
thinking it's so hard. That's the problem.
Yeah. Why is it that you want to smoke? Right. Mm. What is it that it does for you? And then take apart each one of those things that supposedly it does. Well, I'm bored. And it's like, oh, good. Now you're bored with a cigarette. You fixed it. And it's like it doesn't cure boredom. Right. It's just a thing you can do when you're bored. Well, I'm trying to relax. And it's like the only relaxing it gives you is fixing that little edginess that you get through withdrawal. So once you pass the first 3 days, you won't even have that anymore. But cigarettes don't actually relax you. Otherwise, smokers would be very relaxed people, and they are not.
Right. No, that's a good point.
They're not. It's not a thing you associate with people who smoke.
So no nicotine lozenges, no gums, no cigarettes. And if I had my pipe and stuff, and they weren't packed away with all the other stuff in my bedroom, because my entire bedroom has been moved to storage somewhere, while plumbers and so on fix things, I would have thrown away my pipe as well. So no more nicotine for me. I am an ex-smoker. I'm a non-smoker. Thank you.
Love it.
Nice, dude. That's awesome.
Big fan of that.
Very cool.
And and the fun stuff is like, it doesn't say don't think about smoking. It says don't not think about smoking. If you want to think about smoking, think about it. Think about how gross it was. Right? Think about how you don't want to do it. And every time you think about it, think, I'm so glad I don't do that anymore. And just center it on that.
Yeah.
Don't center it in how much you wish you could have it.
That's what I think about every time I think about smoking is I think about every time we picked up that Caroline, that lady that we picked up on our way to church every week, that she was a chain smoker or whatever. Like, and she'd be smoking like as she like got in the car, like putting her cigarette out. And just like we would be like hiding in the backseat of the van with like our shirts pulled over our face. Like it smelled so bad.
Nasty.
And I was like, I don't ever want to be that. Right. Like, I don't want people to have that reaction when I like get in their car or like go to or when right. people come into my house. I don't want it to be like, oh, God, like it just smells like stale smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So. And the amazing thing is you can get yourself to not notice that.
Sure.
But you can't get yourself to not taste it. Mm. So one of the things it has you do is it's like go out and smoke a cigarette and pay attention to the flavor. Notice what you actually taste. And it's like as soon as you start doing that, you're like, yep, that is gross.
That's gross, isn't it?
It's, yeah. It's really just, it's like a fart in a room that you just stop paying attention to.
Tough.
And then if somebody calls attention to it, you're like, yeah, no, it is still lingering. Oh, yeah. You're right. It is technically mm-hmm. still here.
Tough.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah, I'm excited.
That's great. Yeah, I have always heard amazing things about that book. So, yep.
Sweet.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
We're done recommending.
Next month's game.
Next month's game.
Next month's game. Now, I'm confused. Ben, is next month's game my pick or is it Indy?
I believe it's Indy because Richard's Indy. Already started playing and we need to catch up with him.
All right. Then we will go 2 months out and just tell you at some point yeah. that we'll play the game I chose. Yes. So, and then, Corey, I'm going to give you a chance to opt out at any point in here that you want, right?
Yeah, I'm opting out of Indy, not just because I don't have access to it, but because obviously I'm away. Sure. So it's like a good moment for that. And
you can also just say because you don't want to play it. That's fine, too.
Also, you know, I have no qualms with that, but merely for practical yeah. reasons. You've got someone else coming in to play it and I'm true, in another true. Country.
Yeah. So.
The game I Fair. Wanted to give you a chance to opt out on was Season. And so that's my pick for our next game. And the maybe it's just a setting of stakes and bars and how this works. It is purely exploration.
Oh,
like that's it. There might be secrets to it, but there didn't seem to be as I was playing it. I played for a few hours. You can kind of just wander through. And so you are documenting a world that is about to end in some sense. You are like, taking pictures, you are recording things, you're talking to people.
The art already reminded me of Umurangi Generation. And the fact that you're describing it.
Interesting.
Sounds like even more like it.
When you're explaining it, I'm like, isn't that just Umurangi Generation?
Oh, yeah. Very different vibe.
Okay.
Very different vibe.
Okay.
I would say the art is much more Breath of the Wild. To me, at least, that's the way it feels.
Okay.
But you can make it look like Umurangi Generation with the pictures you take. Because you've got filters and stuff.
Oh, for sure.
Much, much more high poly than Umurangi.
Yeah.
And okay. also, it's open world. Right.
Okay.
Now, yeah. It's not truly open world. It's pretty linear from what I've experienced. And I've gotten through the first like two or three areas and it's kind of constantly funneling you towards things. But the feeling of it is to be just like riding your bike through a field, looking at flowers and being like, oh, those look cool. Huh. I hear a bird up in that tree. I'll point my little mic up at that bird. And if you do that, you can put a sticker of the bird in your little scrapbook.
That's
and
cute.
The whole game, the thing you're trying to do is put together your scrapbook and there's no right way to do it. Now, there might be some like you can only get to this area if you put these stickers in.
Sure.
But so far it feels pretty chill. There's no combat. There's just riding your bike, going to the next spot, taking pictures and writing down things.
That's cool.
It's very, very good vibes.
Of course, you have a month to figure out. Yeah. I was gonna say, yeah, take your time.
I have a month to figure that out. Yep. Yeah.
and it's on a bunch Beautiful. Of stuff. Cool. I think I've got it on okay, PS5. Great. I think that'd be my pick because it is very
if
pretty.
If anything's on a PS5, you know, that's a good step in the right direction. Sweet. Okay.
All right. Yeah. So Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I think 89 is when it came out. It's on Steam for Mac and Windows. But if you have it on Mac, you have to have, I think, 16-bit, not 32-bit. So if you're on the M1 Mac like I am, you cannot play it without boot camp and running Windows, which I need to figure out how to do.
Jesus.
So, yeah, that sucks. But I'll figure it out. Richard's already playing it, so it's possible. But yeah.
Ben, let's you and I talk about the Scum emulator. That might be the way for you to play it. But
might be easier than, yeah, another operating system.
Yeah.
Good call.
Or DOSBox, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's do that. Right. Sweet. Go Tunic. I think that's all we have. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much again to David Botluck, who's going to be on soon. I keep saying that, but we're emailing. We're trying to figure out a good game for him to come on. But yeah, maybe Season's going to be that game. Maybe. Oh, we're going to play Star Wars.
Yeah, I was going to say. There we go.
What's the new game called? Survivor. Jedi Survivor.
Jedi Fallen Order, Fall Out of Order.
Yes, exactly.
I'm like, I'm sure it has like 37 colons.
Yeah, lots of colons with this one. Very excited to play it. But yeah, maybe we'll have Tyler Weaver on. He's our Star Wars correspondent, so maybe we'll have him on for that. But yeah, anyway, Botluck's coming on soon. Thank you again to all of our Patreon supporters. can check us out. If you want to throw us a buck, $5 a month, $100 a month, you know, to support us, we would love it. Patreon.com/Mulf. You can always email us if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or games that you want us to talk about or play. That'd be great. That's mulfpod@gmail.com, mulfpod@gmail.com. As always, I've been Ben.
I will be Jason.
All right, Governor.
And I am a mighty cute little fox pirate.
Aww.
And options mean you can keep playing if the challenge is too much right now. You are allowed.
You are. That's what it was. You are allowed.
You are allowed.
I love
look at the cute little fox guy. You are allowed.
Aww.
That's great.
So cute.
Amazing. All right, you two.